Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Thanks.
Matt just hit me.
No, it was more of a...
It was a love pat.
I just realized we never touch. We stand so close together when we do this, and I never reach out and just...
Touch my shoulder?
Get familiar with you.
Yeah. Well, here I am.
There.
My name is Ben Sternke, and I'm here with Matt Tebbe. And that laugh that you heard on the other line was our friend Aaron Damiani, who is a pastor in the Chicagoland area. And today we're going to talk about Lent. It's going to be fun. Aaron's going to teach us all about Lent.
Dryer sheets.
Yep.
Right?
Belly buttons.
Filters.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Lent. No. Lent.
Lent.
Lent, the church season. But before we get into that, Aaron, why don't you give us a little introduction to who you are, what you're all about, what you're up to.
Yeah. Well, I live here in Chicago, so I'm a Midwesterner, born and raised. And my wife, Laura, and I have been married for 16 years. We've got 4 kids and lead a busy life, helping to shepherd a church plant in Chicago. It's in Uptown, and we love that work. So we just had some newcomers over to our dinner table, brought us back to those early days, you know, when we kind of just started with a lot of hospitality and feasting and leading into kingdom life. So, living the dream, really.
It sounds like it. That's great. Some of our good friends, we've got mutual friends, that are part of your church. And so, heard a lot about you, heard great things from them about you, and it's good to have a conversation with you. So,
well, it's fun to be able to sit down and,
and
have a chat about some meaningful things like, removing lint from our lives.
Removing lint.
Which is what I did when I left college. So I grew up practicing Lent in a Roman Catholic context. And for me, it was about not eating meat on Fridays.
Right.
Yeah.
Getting a Filet-O-Fish from McDonald's or going to a fish fry at one of the various Knights of Columbus or you know, Catholic churches around me.
Right.
And it was about giving something up during Lent that... And the more miserable it made you, the better.
Yeah.
Why would I ever want to do that again, Aaron?
Yeah, it sounds miserable.
Yeah. All right. That's been a Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Right. Lent. Don't do it.
Lent. It'll make you miserable if you're into that. Yeah.
It starts tomorrow. Just be aware. Right. Catholics will be eating fish on Fridays. But.
Yes.
Anyway. No, yeah. Why would.
That always kind of cracked me up, though, too. I feel like fish is meat. Like, if you tell a vegetarian that fish isn't meat,
that's what's confusing for me as
well. They get hostile.
Yeah.
It's basically anything that has lungs, you can't eat things with lungs.
Oh, it has to do with lungs?
No, because you probably could eat like dolphin.
Right. Well, that's, yeah.
I don't know how it worked out. It's probably in some Vatican paper somewhere.
Yeah. So,
but that's not why we have Aaron here. He doesn't know that stuff.
So Lent starts tomorrow.
Oh.
This podcast is being released on Tuesday, Fat Tuesday, as they say, and Lent starts tomorrow. But we want to ask Aaron. We want to ask you. You wrote a book about Lent called The Good of Giving Up. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Mm. But why would people want to celebrate or observe this? This part of the Christian year that seems to be, you know, people like Matt have such negative memories of it. Like, what are we doing in Lent, and why would we want to observe it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, like with anything, I mean, I didn't grow up Roman Catholic, but I had some sort of vestiges of growing up evangelical that held negative connotations. It was like overall good things that held negative connotations. Hmm. Like evangelism, or like mm-hmm. quiet times, or, you know, I mean, even going to church for a lot of people is this, for them, it carries sort of baggage because they never connected their heart with what they were doing. And so it ended up being about something else entirely rather than participating in God's grace and, you know, the reality of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit surrounding you with their love. And I think, yeah, for people growing up, sort of that's their experience of Lent, is just going through meaningless motions.
Yes.
And all it leaves you is more miserable, you know, or self-righteous.
Or self-righteous because of how miserable you are.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. Right.
Most self-righteous people are miserable.
Right.
That's
proud
right.
of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the pleasures of self-righteousness, the pleasures of misery are, you know, greater than you might assume.
Let us pray.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's just important to say that Lent is really about preparing our hearts, our souls, our bodies, our families, our churches for the presence of Christ and for Easter and beyond. There's a pilgrimage that we need to take. I think a lot of us assume that, you know, oh, I'm ready for Easter, I'm ready for joy. And then Easter kind of sneaks up on you and you're like, pretending, you know, and you're pushing yourself to enjoy it. Yeah. And so really what Lent does is it kind of takes us through the process that we need as human beings to have that long obedience in the same direction where we've got Jerusalem in our sights and we're going a step at a time towards the presence of Christ, his resurrection, his glory. But we're taking up the easy yoke of his training along the way. So it really is that 40-day pilgrimage where we're seeking to be in the presence of Christ and become like him and prepare for all the glory he has for us.
Yeah. Aaron, you said something profound, I think, and that is we don't really know how to feast unless we fast. Yeah.
Yes.
And we live in a consumer culture that is basically feasting 24/7.
Totally.
Right?
Trying to.
Like, yeah. That's the American dream. And the American dream is you can always be at a feast. And
yes.
Sometimes it's Old Country Buffet. Holla. Sometimes it's Netflix. Sometimes it's, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's my job. Sometimes it's Home Shopping Network. Ben, I know that's one of your favorites. Like, whatever it is, like, we want to feast all the time. But then we don't actually know how to feast. We don't actually know. Like you said, we have to fake it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. You know? Yeah, so say more about how we can reclaim this 40-day journey as a, like, how does it prepare us to really experience joy?
Yeah, well, I mean, in some ways, we've got these, like you said, we've got all these false attachments because we've been given a false promise of fullness. And I think that's what people in the modern age are, they want fullness. They want this sense of overflow.
Yes.
That their life has meaning, and usually it's the most immediate way to feel that fullness is through the appetite and even through the throat, you know, just that sense of like, I'm full, my body is full and buzzed, and I've cut myself off from like all the negative emotions. I've cut myself off from my own spiritual life. And I've been out of, I've like, as you know, Dante pictures the first ring of hell as being full of people who have been given what they want, which is to be out of control, and their desire and their reason have been torn apart. Wow. And so now desire is permanently detached from reason, and people are like these empty souls being blown about by every little wind, you know? And,
yeah.
And that's a little bit of what modern life is like. That's what, you know, feasting without restraint is like. There's no reason and there's no love attached to desire.
Which is ironic, because every Disney princess I've ever listened to has told me to let my heart be my guide.
Right, exactly.
Right? Yeah. And who would know love better than a Disney princess?
Yeah.
Well,
they seem so happy at the end of all the movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We need a Disney princess who will go the 40 days of Lent. That's the Disney princess.
Princess.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So let's before we get too far ahead of ourselves, like, just what is Lent? If maybe some of our listeners are unfamiliar, they're like, Lent starts tomorrow. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. And why are you just telling me?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, right. You know, sorry. We could have used a couple weeks.
This wasn't our idea, people. Yeah, this is always this. Yeah. This happens every week.
So maybe just give us some contours. Like, what is Lent? Like, what does that word mean? Where does this come from?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So the definition, really, you know, you can define it in a few different ways. But the way I've put it in the past is that Lent is this 40-day pilgrimage to Easter, where we seek to become like Christ. The word Lent is not in the Bible. It's an old Saxon word for spring. Hmm. And it was originally called in Latin 40th or 40,
okay,
basically referring to those 40 days.
Yeah.
It's really giving us an opportunity to join with the historic church and the global church in joining Jesus in the wilderness and going out into the wilderness and training for the Father's love.
Hmm.
So... and the historic disciplines of Lent have been basically the easy yoke of Lent includes fasting, prayer, and kind of an old quaint word, almsgiving, basically giving your money away.
Mm-hmm.
And what Lent does is it gives a season where those three disciplines can be tied together like a three-stranded cord, and it can lash us to the presence of Christ and train us in his grace. And basically get us ready for that Easter feast.
Yeah, evocative images there.
I know, yeah. I love the way you describe it. You started off, you know, the way that you celebrated it, I was like, ugh, that does sound awful.
Yeah, right.
Every time
I made
Aaron
myself
talks
miserable listening to
it. Right. Every time Aaron talks about it, I'm like, oh, that sounds really nice.
Yeah. One of the things that really you've said now twice, you said it explicitly and you alluded to it another time, that I want you to unpack for us. How does giving ourselves over to these disciplines in order to identify with, maybe even like recapitulate Christ's journey in the wilderness, how does this prepare us for and ready us for God's love?
Mm.
What can you connect that for me?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I think one thing it does is it reveals how weak we are. I mean, I think it's actually a really good experience to fail in fasting and prayer and almsgiving.
Say that again. I'm going to let it wash over me.
Yeah.
Proclaim it.
It's good to fail at fasting. And, you know, I mean, I get, and my wife and kids will tell you, my threshold for patience, like when I'm low on blood sugar and when I've been training to pray, it becomes difficult. And also when I have less money, I have less freedom. I feel more frustrated. So it's good to realize, man, the limits that we have, because that does open us up to the incredible love of God, and God's love is there just as much as it was before.
Hmm.
So I think number one, it's good to realize we can't earn that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think another way that it trains us and prepares us to receive more of God's love is that it's this, painful but necessary detachment from things that we love a little bit too much.
Hmm.
So, you know what? There's some things that we love to eat, some things we love to drink, some things we love to consume that we love too much. And it's only in the sort of willing giving of those things over, not to make God happy,
right,
but to just basically give ourselves more capacity in our souls and in our bodies for his love. There's these habits that have been operationalized in our bodies and in our relationships that honestly stand opposed to the love of God. We don't even know it.
Yep.
Right.
Yes.
until it's removed, and they're like, "Oh, I really loved that thing," but the freedom of letting it go is the freedom of being able to open ourselves up to God's love.
The picture I'm getting as you talk, Aaron, is that these things that our hearts are attached to, food, you know, drinks, our
home
money,
home shopping network,
right? Only after midnight.
I know.
These things that our hearts are attached to, they are actually the way that we giving them up opens us up to the Father's love is that they're actually blocking us from receiving God's love because our hearts are sort of almost tricked into thinking that we've got something that we don't really have. Like, oh, I know what I need is, you know, another drink. Yeah. I know what I need is, you know, to be able to go to a movie tonight, you know, or whatever that thing is that our hearts are kind of attached to, that actually that blocks us from being able to receive what we really need, which is God's love in those areas. So Lent is this time where we can intentionally let those things go in order to almost examine what's there. Yep. We're not even aware of it until we let those things go. And then we're like, oh, I'm less patient than I thought I was, you know.
So,
and that's right. That connects to the easy yoke that you mentioned earlier, right? So that the easy yoke of Jesus is freeing up our freedom.
Yes.
Right? It frees, we're freed from being in bondage to our desires.
Right.
And we don't get there through more appeasing our desires.
Right.
That's the sort of the modern promise is that the good life of freedom and liberty lies on the other side of you getting every desire met.
Yeah.
Right.
Jesus says, and this is what you're talking about, Aaron, and I think this is what Lent provides us, the discipline of, Jesus says, no, your desire needs to be formed and shaped in my love. Yeah. And the way through that, the way into that is to be confronted with all of the things your desire is doing for you that... Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You don't even know, right?
Yeah.
So if eating always makes the hurting stop, Jesus can never make the hurting, can never heal the hurting, right?
That's right.
Because the hurting is just numbed and medicated, disassociated from.
Right.
And then like we've accepted Jesus, quote, into our heart, but really what we've done is just slapped this idea of Jesus onto our life medication machine, which is our appetites.
Yeah, it's just one more way of doing a sacred secular divide. It's like, well, I can have Jesus over here, but then this over here is the secular part of me that medicates through food, drink, home shopping network, pornography or whatever it might be.
Right.
I think the invitation of Jesus is to let him take control of that area.
Yeah.
And in some ways we've got to let him have control. I mean, so some of it is giving up comfort, and it's not a comfort. Lent is not a comfortable journey. It is a journey to freedom, but it's also not a journey where we have control. You know, we have, all right, I'm going to do this 40-day spiritual adventure, and here are the things that I will do for myself. These goals. And it's not like a New Year's resolution situation.
Right. No.
It's a, hey, someone else is going to lead you where you don't want to go. And it's a good place. I mean, you're walking into the kingdom of God, but you're not in control.
Yeah, you never are in the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it. it's his kingdom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's good. And I'm reminded, too, as we're talking, like, I think one of the lies that we believe instinctively in our culture is that, like, if I eat to make the hurting stop, I think I've made the hurting stop.
Yeah.
Right? But I haven't. I've numbed my awareness of the hurting. That's all I've done. And so, you know, sometimes people will be like, I don't like fasting because I get really impatient. But, you know, to paraphrase C.S. Lewis, I think C.S. Lewis said something about this where he said, like, fasting doesn't, or like, discipline doesn't create that misery. It reveals it.
Yes.
So it's not that fasting makes me impatient. It's that fasting reveals how impatient I am.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I just have removed these crutches that I normally lean on to cover my impatience, right?
That's exactly right. And that's why it is a journey into freedom, because Jesus wants to put his finger on those things. He wants to take the candle of the Holy Spirit and lead you to that part of your life that is, you know, kind of tucked away, but it's like, hey, I want to deal with this part of you. Mm-hmm. And I want this room that you're stuffing things into, I want this to be filled with my glory and my love and my freedom.
Yes.
Because he's preparing us for unimaginable love and glory and communion.
Yes.
And so, this is the sort of the training for that and the revealing of that, the apocalypsis of the things that we want to keep hidden. He wants to lovingly reveal as only he can.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about, so there's some unhelpful ways to observe Lent, right? You can be a fasting champion and be proud of it, right? That'd be unhelpful. You can give a lot of money away, but then make sure everybody knows that you gave a lot of money away. This is Matthew 6, right?
Right.
Matthew 6 is traditionally read on the first Sunday of Lent. No. That's the temptations of Christ. I think it's Ash Wednesday, isn't it? Matthew 6.
Yes.
So when you do your giving, your praying, and fasting. Can you give us a couple more, maybe some practical handholds? So say I'm convinced that Lent isn't just some hipster nonsense, and that it may be
a trend that'll go away,
right? Like a fad, you know, something old,
and like it's one of those rituals and feasts that Paul talks about in his epistles that people want to hold on to, but they actually don't do any good work for us.
Well, maybe let's pause there. Let's not assume that. Can you speak to that, Aaron? Like, what about Colossians? You know, where it's like you're celebrating feasts. Stop it. You know, like what about that? Like, what do we do with that?
Yeah. You know, when you look at the context of what Paul was speaking to in these passages, a lot of what you see is sort of just the beginnings, quite frankly, of Gnosticism, and that's taking hold in these early churches, and they were body denying heresy, you know, body denying ways of thinking and living. Mm. And that was wrapped up in some of these fasts that it was in some ways, it wasn't training the body for freedom. It was it was a demonstration of the body doesn't have the value in the story of God's redemptive plan.
Huh.
So he's not addressing, you know, Paul himself fasted and he, you know, he talked about how he trained his body like an athlete for the purpose of righteousness and his union with Jesus. So Paul's not opposed to fasting. He's opposed to body denying ascetic practices that have roots in Gnosticism and that end in foolishness. And so I think there's a big distinction here.
What I hear you saying then, Aaron, is that, sorry to interrupt you.
No.
What I hear you saying is like it's Lent functions in the opposite way for us.
Yeah.
In that it's reconnecting our spirituality to our bodies.
Yes.
And saying our appetites and desires that reign and live in our actual bodies.
That's
right. That maybe there's nothing more spiritual you can do than to not have coffee for 40 days. Deal with your body's conditioning to rely on that to be your refuge and your strength, and learn how to trust the Lord in the midst of your 2 p.m. yawns.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's a really good way of putting it.
And that matters, like matter matters, whereas Gnosticism would say, well, matter's unfortunate, and there's some ideal world of spiritual realities that we'll finally escape to one day.
Yeah. So that's what Paul is telling people to avoid, right? He's not saying
that's
like...
That's exactly right.
Never fast.
Don't pray at a certain time.
Right. Yeah. He's not saying that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That helps. Yeah.
Good. All right. Let's say now we're convinced. Okay.
Now I'm a little closer.
Right. Right. Now you know. Now we're ready. So what practical ideas would you give? Let's just say I'm an individual and I'm just thinking I'm just going to experiment with Lent. I'm gonna
church. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was thinking like as an individual, like what can I do? Maybe I want to do something with my family or maybe I'm a pastor and I want to do something with my church. So kind of three levels of practical. Can you give us some practical ideas on how to observe Lent?
Definitely. I mean, one thing to consider is that it might be good to just practice it, you and maybe someone in your small group, maybe your small group practices it before you try to scale it to people who are under your influence. Because if we try to give something away we don't have ourselves, it's not going to bear the kind of fruit that I think we all want it to. And so
it's really good.
One thing that it's just good to be reminded is it comes every year. It's going to come next year.
Yep.
And so you know, take on Lent, give it a shot this year, bring others along only in as much as you're ready to. Mm-hmm. But don't do it alone. So it's going to get hard and you don't want to take the journey alone. And so if there's a way to include people in a way that you're ready for,
that's
the who are you going to do this with is a big question.
Okay.
Just to discern through.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah. That's helpful. So what, like if you've got a who, like what are some practical ideas? What, like if I want to say, all right, I want to try fasting. What does that mean?
Yes.
Like, or giving or praying.
Developing a discipline of prayer.
Right. Yeah. Or a new discipline or something like that. What can we do?
Definitely. So before I get practical, there's one more like consideration and that is just to spend some time. So if today's Tuesday, or maybe it's even Ash Wednesday, or even if we're already into Lent, take some time with Jesus to ask him, Lord, what is your invitation to me this Lent?
That's good.
Maybe you do open the Sermon on the Mount, or you open Galatians 5 and you say, put your finger on something and give me a vision and be as specific as possible. What formation do you want for me, Jesus? And then whatever you do for fasting, prayer, and almsgiving, and confession, all of that then points in one direction.
That's good.
And I think that's where the power is. That's where the potency is. And maybe it is, Jesus says, you know what? It's a caffeine addiction. And but more likely, I think the Lord will show us there's something behind, as you guys were talking about, behind the numbing, behind the addiction that he wants to renew and restore. And so spend time in solitude before jumping in and asking the Lord, hey, point something out. So that's the one final thing I'll say before
that's super helpful. Really, really important. I mean, I think that just then it's not like some good ideas that I have to fix up my spiritual life.
I've been wanting to lose 10 pounds anyway.
Right.
So I'm going to fast from ho-hos and ding-dongs.
Right. Yeah. This is more of an invitation from Jesus, where you're actually going to be,
so you don't
responding
just,
to him.
Yeah. You don't just decide on a fast. You discern it with God. Yeah.
That's right.
And maybe
that's
even
exactly
in community, like I'm going to check with my wife, you know, what I'm planning on and just saying, hey, will you help me discern this?
Yeah.
Maybe you too, Ben.
Yeah. I should check with your wife? That's weird.
You should check with my wife about me. No, I'm gonna bounce it off you guys.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's really good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. Good. So discern it. The first practical idea is don't start with practical ideas.
Talk to Jesus about it.
Yeah. Talk to Jesus about it. Discern it. Great.
And also talk to him about, you know, what part of you doesn't want to say yes to him. I mean, there's parts of us that are like no, I don't want to take that invitation.
Right.
You know, my will, part of me says I want that, part of me says I don't want that. And I think if we can discern that too, that's really helpful because that will play a big role.
Yeah, that's good.
There are things in our body, in our minds, in our families, and social structure, even generational patterns that resist that invitation, that say, no, I don't want that. But the more we can be honest about that, we can bring that into conversation with the Lord and he can go, hey, I see that and let's work through this. And so then the yes will be more wholehearted. And it's like the Dallas Willard model.
Yeah.
Jesus gives the vision and then we can respond with a, you know, that,
intention.
Intention, yes, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. The yes, the wholehearted yes, and the honest. Here's my less hearted, you know, yes.
Yeah.
And then from there, almsgiving and fasting and prayer, and confessing our sins and worshiping on Sundays. All of that then makes a lot more sense. And then you're not going, why am I doing this? Why am I not even fish on Fridays? Why am I fasting?
Yeah, that's great. And there's tons of ideas in the book as well. I found when I read it that it was just a really helpful, practical guide to getting started. You know, maybe some little rituals you can do with your family.
Yeah.
Some ways to invite others into it. But I really love your advice. I mean, this podcast is coming out the day before Lent, and you may not be listening to it until Lent. And so if this is your first year of kind of trying to observe or celebrate, I don't know if you really celebrate Lent, maybe you would just observe it. But if this is your first year, maybe it is a good year to just try a couple things with some friends, you know, with your spouse, rather than try to implement some big program for your church.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But next year, maybe there's a chance to invite some more people into it.
Aaron, how do you go about discerning your discipline for Lent? Have you done that already? Or is it something that you are in conversation about?
So we're at kind of end of February recording this. So that's one thing on my sites this week, is to spend a little bit more time with the Lord and ask him what he wants from me. I also want to talk to, you know, people in my life, my bishop and my wife and other people who can see things I don't see, and just be like, what do you think the Lord might be putting his finger on? You know? And, I usually do, in recent years, it's been a consistent thing where alcohol and sugar are two things that, that are pretty clear that those really do help me enter in more consistently. And then someone taught me this thing for fasting, which has been really helpful, is if you go once a week where you start with dinner the night before, and then you can fast from at least breakfast and lunch, and then return to dinner the following night, that's like a 24-hour fast. And it gets you into a rhythm every week where, you can integrate fasting in a way that's kind of doable, and it's not like a sort of, you know, overwhelming starvation period.
So maybe doing that once a week, or once or twice a week, maybe just like a 24-hour fast. Yeah, and then alcohol and sugar are, for you, like pretty consistently helpful fasts.
They really are helpful, because I can feel that, even, you know, the just even that longing for dessert after dinner, like I do want to feel kind of satiated.
Yeah.
And it's just a little bit of a check. And then usually a few weeks in, I'm like, man, I do feel more free. And again, it's not about weight loss. Right. It really is about sort of, undoing all the layers of the false self that we don't even know are there.
Yeah. And you mentioned sugar. I mean, even the alcohol thing, it can be hard to go without your breakfast bourbon, you know?
Yeah, that's
but
right.
But then, you know, a couple days into it.
But Jesus is inviting us, and so
right sermons. Elite staff meetings without your breakfast bourbon. Right. It's a challenge.
Everybody has to carry their cross. Ben, do you have any thoughts yet? Preliminary thoughts about yours?
I would echo Aaron. Alcohol is usually, like, alcohol and sweets are, like, typically like a, that's what I'm going to be doing for sure. I have found the last few years that, the 24-hour fast that you talked about, Aaron, like, that's been really helpful for me. I typically do that on Fridays. I'll probably do that again.
Yeah.
I haven't thought much about it past that, though.
Okay. All right. That's good.
How about you?
Well, I think it's really good for those of us who are new to Lent and the discipline of fasting to know that it's more than just food. So I have a lot of friends that have a difficult time. Like, fasting from a meal or even all day is like too high of a bar, but maybe deleting your app on your phone that checks email, or right, or going to bed at like 9:30 and getting up at 6, right? So fasting from just sort of like doing this discrete stuff with my time, it's really helpful for people to reimagine what it means to give up, and it's not simply just, you know, eating fish fillets on Fridays or whatever.
Yes.
You know, for me, if we're talking about like reordering our attachments, I probably have to fast from fasting because I just do it so much.
Yeah, that's
pretty
right.
Much the best at it. No. No, I've actually been thinking about, I mean, I bring up coffee for a reason. I think, you know, coffee has become, it's kind of my, it, I mean, I'm sort of ADD, so it's sort of my street Ritalin, you know? It's like a life hack that I've adopted to sort of help me focus. And part of that's because I have a lot of shame in my inability to be attentive in the way that society asks me to be. And and almost is like, this is the expectation of humanity, that you perform like this. And coffee gets me closer to sort of society's expectation. But if I'm going to, if I'm going to like learn to deal with that shame and learn how to be in the, with the Lord with it, like caffeine for me is one of the ways I compensate for it. And so just allowing my, allowing the, like the complete unadulterated Matt Tebbe out, you know, without caffeine, without, without this crutch. It's one of the things that I'm kicking around. And then I, honestly too, listening to my body. So, there's days when I feel like I need a nap and I feel lots of shame about that too. And rather than nap, I'll just, you know, have a cup of coffee.
Power through it,
you know? And I think that me being in touch with the frailty, weakness, needs, like actual biological needs of my body, is helpful for me. It's really helpful. My creatureliness matters.
Well, and that, I mean, I think that's the kind of sort of beautiful, vulnerable self-awareness that the Lord's inviting all of us to, and what you just shared is a great model for us to follow. I mean, it's yeah, like you said, it's not just the coffee, but what's behind it? What does it mean? What
what work is it doing for me?
Yes,
not, it's not just this thing, but it actually is doing work for me.
And I think that that kind of captures for me, like, that's what Lent can be about. Is this increase, if we're honest with ourselves, if we're honest with others, if we're vulnerable and self-aware, like, it can grow our awareness. It's not just about the performance of fasting and giving. You know, it's not just about the performance of it where I can check it off the list and say, I fasted for Lent. I successfully, you know, did my plan.
I only broke my fast 16 times,
which
is better than last year when I broke it 24.
And this gets back to like what you led with, which is like, even our failures in Lent are an opportunity for us to grow in awareness of God's grace for us, awareness of why we failed. Like, what, like, what is this that I made this commitment and then I broke it? Why? Like, what's happening in me that made me feel like I just need this right now, right?
It's more than just total depravity is what you're saying.
I can't just throw that, like, well, we're all full of sin, so everybody's off the hook. No, it's like, no, what, pay attention to it. Like, how does God's grace want to meet you specifically in the midst of, in the midst of this? And we get there the more aware of self we become, and our deep desires and drives, the more aware we are of those things, the better we are able to receive God's grace in those places. So, and Lent is an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, that's beautifully stated. It really is. It's, you know, you're describing hunger pains that, you know, point us in the direction of hunger pains for grace, hunger pains for the love of God. And it's just crazy how close our physical hunger pains and physical headaches really help us see those spiritual hunger pains and the spiritual headaches, that like part of me needs communion from something more beautiful and satisfying from the outside. And until the substitutes, until I starve my system and my series of systems from the substitutes, you know, it's harder for us to see the face of God and the glory of God, the goodness of the goodness that He has for us. So yeah, there's this beautiful undoing, but it's never feels beautiful somehow until it's over.
I know. I never look forward to Lent. Like, even now I'm just thinking about it, I'm like, oh geez, Lent's coming.
I actually, like, all truth be told here, if I can be honest, for the first time in
First time in the podcast,
first time in my life, I actually, my personality is a very Lent personality.
There's a melancholy.
There's sort of this committed moroseness that sort of permeates all my perspective, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mistrust sort of sunshines and tulips. And so Lent is like the time of year when I want to surround myself with people that are actually experiencing reality the way I normally do.
Well, I'm glad you're looking forward to it.
I don't look forward to it. No. My perspective is still morose about Lent, but at least there's other people who are
kind of like look forward. There's like everybody else can join me in my
solidarity.
Yeah, this is how I feel all the time
in my
everybody.
Melancholy.
Yeah.
Aaron, yes, thanks for putting up with our jokes and thanks for being here, man.
That's been so fun. Thanks for having me.
And the good of giving up.
The good of giving up is the freedom of Lent.
Discovering the freedom of Lent.
Yeah, we'll put
you've got to discover it.
You do. Yeah.
You can't just I can't just read about Lent. I can't just buy your book and read about Lent and and have the freedom. I actually have to do it.
You could if you were Gnostic, right? Oh, I've been enlightened about Lent. I don't need to practice it because I've
now I know about it.
No, I know about it. God is my refuge. I don't have to trust Him as my refuge.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I can still drink coffee because I know that this isn't my real refuge.
See, what Lent reveals is that we've inherited a Gnostic Enlightenment Cartesian spirituality that abstracts God into non-real spaces of our life.
Yeah. If I have the knowledge, I'm good. I don't need to do it.
So Lent saves us from hell, basically. That's what you're saying.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God. Thanks be to God. Aaron, it's been great to be with you. And
it's been great talking, guys.
God bless you and your ministry in Chicago, and maybe we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
Great, guys.
Peace, y'all. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media too. And we would love to hear from you. So please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.